Welcome back to the Crossheart Off-Road Podcast, brought to you by Prime Shape Fitness. In today's episode, I talk to Tommy. He's not from Minnesota, but he has a great idea about cutting his Jeep in half. And I'm wondering if I should do the same thing. As you all know, I have a TJ. A lot of my friends that I ride with all have TJs. And we're always jonesing for a little extra room. So the LJ comes to mind, but the LJ seems to be made out of gold. You can't find an LJ Rubicon unless you have about $25,000 to start, or it's a piece of junk and you got to build it all back up. So one of the ideas that I had was, well, can you stretch one, a TJ, out a little bit? And then I went down the rabbit hole. Good old internet and YouTube kind of brought me to Tommy. So I'll be introducing Tommy in a bit, but it's just, yeah, my idea was, well, what's cheaper, to cut your Jeep in half and stretch out a little bit, or just to find an LJ? So that's kind of what we're going to debate today, especially since if you already have a TJ and you already put on, you know, lift, wheels, tires, lockers, if you didn't have them before, all the stuff your doodads do on the inside, you kind of attached to this Jeep. I mean, what can you do to just stretch out a bit more? So I went through and I was watching different episodes, and some people just stretched the frame out and found a Teton LJ tub, slapped it on there, and then I found Tommy. And in our conversation we had here, kind of, you know, a little behind the scenes of podcast, I usually call the person I'm going to interview first. This was a couple days ago. I talked to Tommy, and usually it's about 5-10 minute phone call, just a quick hitter, just to be like, hey, here's what we want to talk about. Here's kind of a little bit of rules of the podcast. He and I talked for 38 minutes and change, and kind of wish I would have recorded that, because some gold. So hopefully we hit all that again today on all those subjects. We had a great time talking. So here is Tommy out of Texas talking about his stretch TJ. Here it is. All right. Welcome to the Crossroad Off-Road Podcast. I have Tommy Regan. Is it Regan or Reagan?
Regan.
Regan here from Texas. Where in Texas are you coming from?
Austin. Austin, Texas. Right there in the middle.
Oh, I like it. Okay. I've been to Texas one time. Went to Dallas and enjoyed myself. It was a good time. So he has, I think, the idea that us TJ guys should think about. So he has, and if you want to watch this video, we can go to YouTube. It'll be on YouTube, I believe. But he's sitting right behind him is his Jeep, and it's now back together, it looks like, a little bit. But he had cut it in half. So he has a YouTube channel called Wheel Addiction, and he has a yellow TJ, so if you find it on there, that's him. And I'm going to hit play on it so I can have it going on in the background here. But it's a great YouTube channel. Why I found it is my buddy Wade is obsessed with getting an LJ. He and his wife, they've got an extra dog, and now they think they need all this more room in their Jeep. So I kind of tease him about it, and he wants to get an LJ. I'm like, well, LJs are hard to come by. And then I'm like, well, can you stretch a TJ? What would that be like? And I found a few different YouTube channels, and I found Tommy's, and I thought it was great. He's doing what I think that might be the way to go. So he's going to kind of answer the question I asked before. But tell us a little bit of Tommy, how you got into wheeling first off. How did you get into off-roading in general?
So I used to race cars. I was really big into autocrossing, and I did that really pretty diehard for about 12 years or so. Raced at a national level, you know, did pretty well with it, but I got kind of burned out on it. I needed something different. And so I quit cold turkey. And in 05, I decided I wanted to go off-road. And so I bought a full-size Bronco, super nice one too, you know, fully loaded, Eddie Bauer and all this kind of stuff. And my vision was to just go, you know, pack up for a weekend and basically overland, although I didn't know the term at the time, but basically go overlanding, or, you know, ghost towns and camping along the way and being self-sufficient and all that. What I didn't realize is that basically there's no public land in Texas to go do that kind of thing. Very, very little anyway. So it meant that the only time I could go off-roading was to go to an off-road park and go rock crawling, which turns out I really liked. But, you know, and I re-geared the Bronco, put 35s, built bumpers, rockers, you know, rock sliders and all this kind of stuff. But ultimately, I'm running with all these Jeeps that have much smaller bodies, and the body on this Bronco was beautiful. And I was like, I don't want to tear this thing up. So ultimately, I made the tough decision to sell the Bronco, and I bought a Jeep.
You want to know something? Bronco prices have just went way up.
Don't tell me that.
I was just watching Mecum Auto Auctions 2 days ago, and it was, granted, it was a mint Bronco. It was an 89, I believe, white Bronco, and it was mint. And it went for like 35 grand. And I'm like, 35 grand. It must have like 10,000 miles on it. And I was just blown away. You're kicking yourself for selling it. Yeah.
Jeez. I mean, 10 years ago, you couldn't hardly give those things away.
Oh,
super nice ones would be 5-7 grand.
No, they shot up in price. And I should go back and look at it and make sure I get the number right. But I was blown away. I was like 35 grand. And then they had an F-250, 1975 F-250, $93,000. Granted, it was mint, but went for 93 grand. So it's fun to watch it because I just had it on while I was working here. I just look up every now and again. I was like this. I was like 93 grand for a F-250. It was mint. You know, granted, it was a mint deal, but that's like,
yeah.
I don't know if you guys watch the Icon guy. Do you watch the Icon Motors
guy? I'm familiar with him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he builds, you know, the starting price is about 100.5 for a Bronco. But those are the old style, you know, the small body Broncos. And you had the big body Bronco, it sounds like. And then they have, that's the one that sold, was a big body Bronco, like the OG Bronco, basically what it looked like.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So back to your story.
Yeah. So I decided, all my friends that I wheeled with had Jeeps. So they were all members of Austin Jeep Exclusive, which is, it's actually the oldest Jeep club in Austin. So shout out to all my AJE peeps. No, it's a bunch of, I mean, great guys and girls. Yeah, really, really good people. And that's who all my wheeling friends were Jeep people. And so I was like, all right, well, I can have either a big Bronco that I beat up on the trails, or I can have a Jeep. And because it's smaller, I can actually keep it still pretty nice looking and not completely beat up on the trail, you know? And because it was my daily, I was like, you know, and I refuse to have just a beat up trail rig. That's not my MO at all.
Yeah.
And I've got a whole theory on that. You know, it's impressive to me when you see a really clean vehicle that's wheeled really hard. Because it's really difficult to do that, you know?
It's been our wheelhouse, us guys too, but we do have some scratches. We call it Minnesota pinstriping from going through the woods.
Absolutely. In the wind. You know, stuff happens, but I'll tell you, my gauge was always, I want my Jeep to look nice enough that if I want to take a date out in it, I can. Okay. That's kind of like my gauge. If it starts getting beat up to the point where I'd be embarrassed to, like, you know, but... You know, I like my vehicles to look nice and be clean and all that kind of stuff. And I try to keep it. I mean, I realize I'm not making much for my case right now. The thing's cut in half, but you get my point.
Yeah.
So so I got a Jeep, and you know, when I bought it, it had a lift in 35s on it. But it was kind of a basket case, so it needed a lot of work. And it was not in good shape. So I had to put a lot of TLC into it.
So it's we know it's yellow. It's an 01, which is the best year. I mean, think about it. An 01 TJ with a 4 liter and a 5-speed, 3044 on the axles. You probably had stock gearing yet too with the 35s?
When I bought it, it had 456s in it. And eventually I put 488s in it. And with 35s, man, that was a great combo. Eventually I went to 37s. Yes, still on a Dana 30 front. And but I went to 37s, and with 488s, it was okay. It was still good. But 513s would have been even better. I'm a big fan of steep gear.
And you're going tons then next too with the axles, or are you keeping what you got?
Yeah, so I'm going up to 40s. And in my world, that basically is a prerequisite for, or that, I mean, you got to have tons, in my opinion, or some pretty high end, you know, axle to wheel on a 40 comfortably and safely. Yeah. So I've got a Super Duty front, and a Sterling rear, both out of, 3/4 or 1 ton Ford trucks. And so that's what's going in. They're sitting over there under a pile of stuff over there. But yeah, and so like I said, 40s and so this isn't just the stretch. It is a complete revamp. I'm building all new suspension again. I got ORIs for the rear, but I've got some that I will be putting on for the front, building all new suspension and everything up there too. So a lot going on.
So I did ask him, you guys are probably wondering, is this guy do this for a living? Is he a professional, fabricator? And he's like shaking his head, no. Tell us about the project. You're probably like me. It's like, okay, I want to do this project. I want to make this box bigger or whatever it might be. A professional would do it one day. I'm gonna take 2 months.
How
you feel?
So I am a mechanical engineer, but I do not do this kind of thing for a living. Most of my career has been in designing or manufacturing computers, servers, things like that. Last 7 years or so, I've gotten into a sales engineering role, which I really enjoy. This stuff I just do for fun. I mean, but it's what I enjoy doing. I like big fabrication projects. And years ago, before I knew how to work on cars, so by the time, in 1996, I had never really worked on a car before ever. Mm-hmm. Dad always said, I didn't learn any mechanical stuff from Dad because, he was not mechanically inclined. So it was all about graduating from school, started racing, and started kind of working with friends of mine who did fabrication to learn from them. And then I just kind of, ran with it from there. So, but that's where it kind of started. The first big project on the Jeep was building all new long arm suspension, cutting off all the factory stuff. And I did that back in 2008.
Okay. This Jeep in 2005 or 2007? I can't remember. Where did you pick this Jeep up?
I picked it up in 2007.
Okay.
So it was 6 years old at the time and, had a fairly rough life, I think.
So I am going to back up a little bit. What car did you race? I mean, you did an autocross. Were you a Camaro guy, Corvette guy? What did you autocross with?
I've been all over the spectrum. So I'm a big pony car fan. So I've had several Mustangs, Camaro. I raced BMWs. Actually, trophy to nationals in a Volkswagen Scirocco. It's kind of off the wall. I liked the challenge of racing a variety of cars. Big power rear wheel drive, small power front wheel drive, whatever the case may be. And I took a national championship. I podiumed at nationals a few times. And so I had some pretty good success with it, but I had to get out of it. It was just taking over my life and that wasn't healthy.
Yeah. Well, cool. I just wanted to kind of see what kind of car you got into and got out of. The guy I couldn't think of yesterday was Kibbe. Was the guy I was talking. Remember when I was talking about Kibbe and Friends and the Muscle Car Places, the other podcast that I was talking to you about. I couldn't remember the guy's name, but he a supercross, or what do you call it? Autocross. He's an autocross only podcast too. So it's one to look up. But he's been doing this automotive podcasting thing forever. So that's the guy. I was Rob awesome. Kibbe. That's his name. I'll give him a name.
Okay, back. I'll look him up.
But he does. He has minimum of 3 podcasts about classic cars, off-roading cars, autocross, like you were talking about. So I've been on the phone
very cool
times for some cool ideas. But so back to the Jeep. Okay, so now we've been going for a while here, kind of dancing around the subject. So my thoughts, like I said, my buddy Wade and any TJ guy will know that a TJ is tiny. I mean, it is cute little package. It goes, does a lot of things, but one thing that a four-door, and you mentioned this in our pre-call, a four-door JK will climb a hill better because you can get those front wheels up and over that ledge. I think a TJ is right around 93-94 inches
for 93 and a half inches. So yeah, you're dead on.
And then LJ is what?
103 and a half.
And so it has that extra little bit to get over that ledge to kind of climb better, and TJs just kind of fall short of that. The advantage of a TJ or an LJ over a JK then is LJs and TJs are narrower. Okay, they're also a little bit lighter, and so you have that advantage there. You'd be a little bit narrower on the trail. It's not just this, and it's not a Fiat. That's always tease my buddies with four doors that they're driving a Fiat. It's not a Jeep, but I know it's a Jeep. I'm joking, guys, but last wheel Jeep is a TJ, by the way. But anyhow, so So that's where the LJ kind of comes at, really good sweet spot. Now, the disadvantages of an LJ, they're built in 05, 06, and half of 04. And they built like barely any of them by comparison to anything else. People weren't taking them right away. The odd thing was they weren't a hot ticket at the time until people started realizing, oh, that's awesome. You know, that is cool to have the extra few inches. Probably why they weren't taking them was an extra $2,000. Now, think about that. If you could have had a TJ Rubicon, you know, for whatever it was at the time, 27, we'll throw out a number. Yeah. And then the longer version is 29. Today's dollars, a used market, that TJ Rubicon is probably worth 17, you know, say it has 100,000 miles. That LJ is worth like 40, you know, 25 to 40, depends on how good a shape it is.
It's insane.
What it is. You know, and I'm not too far off on these prices, guys. You can look them up. I look them up all the time. But 25 to infinity, it feels like. And granted, I'm not looking for one that's beat up. But my buddy Wade did find one for like $8,000. He was, oh, should I get it? Should I do this? And had 200,000 miles on it. So if you're looking to do an engine swap on top of it, you know, 200,000, yeah, it'll go 300. That 4-liter is awesome. We get it. It's the best engine ever made. We got it. But if you want to do anything like what you're doing, put bigger wheels and tires on it, an extra length, you know, engine swap might be in order. And Wade really wants to do a common swap. That's kind of, he is stuck on that idea. So I'm picking on him a lot, but I like all of his ideas. I just like, man, that's going to be a lot of work. So,
yeah.
And I love all of his ideas. I just keep on going with, I just want a little bit more room. You know, what would it take to get a little more room? So I'm just kind of going down that rabbit hole. And that's how I end up with Tommy. So, and the idea is, I'm going to kind of give you an overview of what it looks like. So it's called a TJ6, and in the end, from the belt line up, you know, kind of the midline of the Jeep up, it's going to use all LJ parts. So the idea is to use a soft top or a hard top off an LJ on your TJ, so the rails have to be extended or added onto or pulled off an LJ somewhere else and put on a TJ. And then it gets really interesting. The belt line below, there's a few different options. Now, you're doing a bunch of different stuff because you're doing like six additions at once, but we're going to try to stick to just the idea of TJ to LJ. What are the couple, you know, kind of tell us the hang-ups or different options you might have had going into that process?
Yeah, the big things to think about that you have kind of options are, so like you already said, when you do a TJ6, you're lengthening the body of the Jeep and the frame by 15 inches.
Where did
so everything like come from?
Let's talk about the TJ6 name first off.
So, good question. So, back in the day, I think it was like from the mid 50s to the 70s, Jeep offered a CJ6. Everybody knows the CJ5s and CJ7s and the Scrambler, the CJ8, you know, but they offered a CJ6, which was, I mean, they're out there and you can get them cheap. And what they are is a longer wheelbase. CJ5 basically. So if you notice the door openings on a CJ5 are a lot narrower, the fender well kind of cuts into the door opening. So the door isn't just a rectangle at the bottom, it's kind of got the fender kind of cutting into it. The CJ6 still had that, but there was an extra, I don't know, maybe 10 inches or so, 15 inches, I don't even know, grafted into the Jeep, the CJ6 from the factory. So the rear axle was still really far back, much like on a TJ6 conversion, but it was a really unique body style. And they weren't nearly as popular as TJ5s or 7s. Mm-hmm. But for those of us who like wheeling and we appreciate that low, that really nice departure angle, the CJ6 is awesome. It's one of my favorite Jeeps. Mm-hmm. And if I was going to do like a resto mod or something like that, it'd be an amazing Jeep to do.
Yeah.
But that's where because when you take a TJ and you basically cut it in half, frame and body, and you graft in that extra 15 inches, the kind of body style that comes out looking, it kind of looks like a CJ6. The rear axle is a little bit farther back, unlike an LJ, where you have an extra, you know, a little bit more overhang on an LJ. But on a CJ6 or a TJ6, you have a lot less rear overhang. So you got a lot better departure angle, more wheelbase. So that's kind of you know, one of the big draws to it. And that's where the name comes from, though, is the why it's called the TJ6.
And one other company, they had the same idea with the TJ, where they stretched the TJ out, and it was AEV. They did an AEV 110, I think it's called. And what it looks like is a stretched LJ. You look at it now, I go like, well, why they stretched that LJ? Well, the LJs weren't invented yet.
Yeah.
When it came out, so you'll see, I saw a couple of them on there, and you want to talk about money, like $80,000 these things go for. But I saw one, had like 25,000 miles on it, and it had a bunch of stuff, all the bells and whistles, everything you think an LJ Rubicon looked like on 37s, that's what this was, except it was 7 inches longer yet.
Yeah.
And had a hard top. Like they made a hard, stretched the hard top even.
Custom hard top, custom soft top, that's the, then that's a problem.
Yeah, so with that, the AEV 110s, they look pretty cool. And when I first saw you starting to do it, that's what came to my mind was the AEV stuff. And I actually have my iPad here, and I was pulling stuff up while I was watching here and doing our
stuff.
And I was like, okay, is he doing that length? So it's kind of trying to figure it out. Then I started putting everything together, what you're doing. So let's go back to below the belt line, the two options. I kind of cut you off.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, so here you can see, like, this is where the floor is for the front seat and for the back seat passengers. Back seat passengers, your foot goes right here. The factory tub steps up right here and then comes back, like maybe 4 or 5 inches. I'm trying to look at my tub over here in the other side of the corner of the garage. But about 4 or 5 inches, it steps up and then it comes back. And that's where the seat is mounted. And that's the height of your cargo area and all that in the very back. When you do a TJ6, you have the option of either extending the floor and keeping this low and then step it up where the seat goes. Or you could keep it stepped up and just add that extra 15 inches up higher. What you need to decide is how much more leg room do you want for your passengers, or do you want any, or does it matter? And then, where do you, would you rather have some room maybe underneath for like an air tank or, you know, stuff like that? Or would you rather room inside the Jeep, which is what I'm doing, because I want to be able to, I might build some storage underneath the seat. Give my backseat passengers maybe a little bit more leg room, but the thing I'm looking forward to is when the seat's in, I'll have room underneath. I can keep toe straps or, you know, gear or whatever I want to put in there. So you have options, and it's all going to have to be hand fabricated one way or another. So there's, it's not like, I know we talked about, like, does somebody offer a kit or anything like this? And no, they don't. The other thing to consider is, like, when you're replacing the body, you know, you have the belt line up top, which it used to be that you could just go to Mopar and buy an LJ belt rail. So you could stretch the body and then put that on top, and you need that if you're going to run a soft top or, I guess, a hard top. But, you know, it's it's no longer available now. So now when you do that, you're going to have to buy parts off of a scrap Jeep somewhere to create that belt rail in the right length.
How are you doing?
A little bit of a challenge.
How are you doing it, though?
So it's kind of funny because, so there's a TJ6 group on Facebook. And there I found some guys who, yeah, great group, by the way, highly recommend it. I kind of came across some guys that I met on, or virtually met, on jeepforum.com, who had particularly, there's Matt with his TJ6 conversion with an LS in it, 6 liter no less, and Jay, who lives in Taiwan, I believe. And funny thing though, when I was looking for to graft in that extra 15 inches of belt rail, Jay sent me his off of his build, because he sourced some of those original LJ belt rails. So he got lucky. It was awesome for him. And he just sent them to me. I just paid for the shipping and he sent me the belt rails that I need. So I'm going to graft his belt rails into my Jeep. And his was like the first TJ6 I'd ever seen.
Because I'm having a hard time finding it. I know other people are probably looking at their phones right now too.
And the other thing though is you can go to scrap junkyards and everything. All you have to do is drill out quite a few spot welds. And for what it's worth, this is all documented in fairly decent detail in one of my earlier videos. You drill out some spot welds and the belt rails just come right off. Mine are hanging in the garage over here right now. So I just have to, graft, cut them in half, graft in that extra 15 inch piece that I got from Jay. And then the belt rails will basically be done other than paint.
All right. I found it. It's called the Jeep TJ6 group. I found the name.
There you go.
Actually, it goes through a bunch of questions. So I'm going to do those questions later. Like, do you have a Jeep? Are you going to be a nice guy on these forums? So I'll go do that stuff later. But yeah, I'm interested in this group here because, it's 889 members right now, and I'd love to see that grow because this is intriguing to me that this many guys are interested in doing this. And it'd be great, like, if the guys out there who send you the magazine every month, you know, these guys right here who keep sending you magazines, it'd be great if they offered some sort of kit. That'd be kind of cool. I know the thing is, where your hard part is, I know you're going to get to it probably, is the pans. Because the pans have an uneven bottom, they have channels for water and everything. Yeah. That's the biggest challenge. It'd be great if there was just a stamp steel, but stamping is why there's not one out there. You have to build that whole machine to do it. That's a ton upon ton machine. It's like, you know, 25 tons coming down, making that piece of equipment, and then they make another one just to make that one stamp.
Yeah,
millions of dollars. I was trying to think about how you could do that cheaper. I was racking up how to get to that part. So that's kind of one of the hangups. So the belt line was one hangup, and you found yours, and you kind of have how other people could do it. But I'm looking at your videos right now too. You kind of walk through it all. They're pretty short, like 10 minutes long, I think your videos are, maybe a little longer.
I try to keep them reasonably, you know, short. You know, they run, I think, from about maybe like 8 to, I think the longest one, maybe 20.
Yeah.
And so I try to keep them around 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, you kind of walked through that and that challenge itself, and we got to the seam. I was like, "Ooh, that looks like that one scared me a little bit because they're like, that's not a point. Well, yeah, you can draw on your Jeep. Like, this is where I'm going to cut it, and then when you start getting to that seam, okay, now we're serious. Okay, it's like having kids with a woman. Now you're serious. You know, life of this project right here. So." So tell us about now we have an idea of where you're cutting, how you're doing yours, but what was the challenging part when you said, okay, this is, we're not holding back now when you started cutting?
So it was when I first, you know, removing the belt rail was the first thing that I did. And I was just drilling some spot welds that came off. I could have put that back on, no big deal. But it was when I marked out and I drew the line on the side of the body, and I first took my, I took my cutoff wheel and just first start cut in that first inch. And I was like, I'm an idiot. why am I doing this? By all accounts, this Jeep performs awesome, you know? But I was like, you know, the ultimate thing is I would not be happy with it if I didn't do this. Mm-hmm. So don't get me wrong, this is a lot of work. And it's more than any sane person should try, really. But I know what makes me happy. I know me too well. And if I left my Jeep the way that it was, I'm not going to be as happy as I will be when this is done. I know it sounds probably silly, but whatever. Oh,
I'm with you. I'm probably halfway done with the idea I have for my Jeep, even though there's only two things I have left to do. But I know that as soon as I do those two things, there's going to be two more things right after it. And it's just going to keep going. So I'm like, well, it's never done. Like, I like when people go on, they get on Facebook and they're like, done. I'm like, done? Question
mark. Wow, that's cute.
You're not done. You're just done for today, I think. So,
yeah.
But, you know, if you guys are watching this on YouTube, which I invite you guys to get to this on YouTube, we're about 22 minutes into, 25 minutes in. His Jeep, if you look at it, being the post, the B pillar is cut in half on each side. The only thing you can see is the firewall on the front end and then frame and a bit of the floor pan. So that's all we're seeing here. And so so the pan part is going to be the tough part getting back together. Okay, what's your plan now? Now that's all apart. Now the frame is put together. So you're starting it back in the reassembly process. Kind of fills
out what your plan is here. Yeah, so first of all, putting the frame back together, and this is for, now granted, we talked about how my Jeep is a little bit different because I already back halved it 5 years ago. And that posed a few new challenges for me, but if somebody has like a stock TJ, it's going to be easier to do a TJ6 than what I'm going through. So basically, to do the frame is pretty simple. You just cut it in half, and there's a spot where there's two little marks on the frame that you can measure before. You cut between those, you add 15 inches, you know, and again, yeah, that's all of my, you know, videos too. So, and you sleeve it, and there's any number of ways you can do that. So the frame is pretty straightforward.
So explain what a back half is, because there's probably some Fiat guys here who don't understand what a back half means.
Good point.
We'll back up a little bit.
Yeah.
I kind of figured what a back half meant, but we on our 40-minute phone call, you explained it to me. Explain it to us again. What's a back half?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for bringing that up. So there's a couple different ways of back halfing a vehicle. And in the case of a Jeep, it basically means you're cutting off the frame at some point towards the rear of the chassis, and you're going to fab up something different. You know, in my case, it was a matter of cutting the frame right here, where you can see this big fish plate here. And this is a kit that I got from Undercover Fab. I relocated the rear axle back about 6 inches. And when I did, I put, you know, new body armor on there, moved the fender well opening back 6 inches to accommodate the new wheelbase. But for the most part, that's considered a back half. This is all was cut off, and I fabricated, you know, built all this stuff or whatever. Some guys will take it a little bit more aggressively, and they'll do cut this off, and they'll build like all tube work, like a roll, but like a buggy, you know, full roll cage and everything off of that. And that's just a different version of a back half, but it's obviously much more aggressive and, you know, more for like trail rigs and such.
The goal of the back half is to get more wheelbase, to get closer to that magic 103 and a half or whatever, the LJ length. Is that kind of
it's I mean, usually it's guys are doing it to get more wheelbase. They could be doing it because they want to cut off the body and run tube work and try to make it lighter. Or they're building all new suspension. There are any number of reasons, but yeah, for the most part, you know, guys are trying to get more wheelbase out of the thing.
Too much time.
And that was my reason.
Just too much. Guys in Texas have too much time in your hands, and you don't have rust to deal with. If you guys are watching us on YouTube, because I said, hey, you get a lot of rust. You have no clue what rust is. You're like, nah, I've never seen it. I'm like, oh my God. I told a story about how I got the two bolts on the rear shock towers. I was comparing Wade's lift compared to mine. He broke all four of his, and I got all four of mine out, and it was a miracle. But that was just a rusty hot mess. I mean, half the time we start a project is, okay, let's scrape away the rust so we can find the bolt heads to break them off. That's kind of how it goes.
I don't want to make all your Minnesota listeners mad, but I have never broken a bolt on this thing due to rust, taking it apart or anything. Sorry.
Just FYI, currently a broken bolt, but that's just what it is. So yeah, it's funny to look at your Jeep and go like, God, that thing is just, you know, the frame, you can see black on the frame. You know, our frames turn to rust. Like there's brand new LJs that are rusting currently. You can hear it right now. Or not LJs, JLs. They're brand new ones that have rust on them. It's just amazing how the salt on a
roof. Well, y'all have salt, right?
Yeah, we got salt. I was going to say, I didn't hear your accent until, like, we got in a call today, but now I hear your accent. It's kind of fun.
And, you know, I always told that I don't have an accent. I grew up in New Orleans, and I was always told I don't have an accent. I come out here, and there's, like, nobody knows where I'm from because I'm just generic, I guess. I don't know.
I'm almost all Minnesotan with your accent, but I can hear it coming out saying y'all. So as a kid, we had a neighbor moved in from Oklahoma. And we about died laughing because we always were used to our accent. Everybody just talked normal.
Yeah, right.
And he's just throwing off. I'm like, wow, this is interesting. And this is, I was a little,
yeah.
Kid, really died laughing. But that's, you know, now I'm used to accent of other people, I guess. But back to the Jeep. You know, we get off topic of a good bit. So now we have an idea about the frame, how you got it together. But how about these side panels? And this is what would stress me out, because I would want my Jeep to look like I would want to take my wife on a date. But if I had this big gap here where I added this, you know, 10, 15 inches into it, I have an idea what I would do. But what are you going to do? How are you going to do your body work?
So a couple different ways to do it. You can actually buy from like Quadratec. They sell body panels. Some of this is like one layer thick for the most part, one sheet metal layer, but a lot of it is multi-layer. So it, and if you'll notice, hopefully you can see this, but right here, mm-hmm. these cuts, the outside cut, I didn't cut all the way through. I had to cut this piece just on the outside, and then I had to come back here and separate the seam sealer. And so anyway, but when you're putting it all back together, you know, on the side panel here, the sheet metal goes up and then it takes a bend inward up towards the belt rail. So I didn't want to have to, you know, fold sheet metal to make that happen. So Quadratec sells replacement panels, which basically you would just buy one of those, they're super cheap, and you cut off 15 inches basically and kind of graft it to fill that void. And then you just tack weld it in, or you know, and a combination of potentially some sort of bonding agent, like some sort of epoxy. A lot of guys kind of end up doing both some welding and some, you know, sort of bonding material. And there's any number of ways to kind of get the sheet metal to attach to one another, basically. But the other thing you could do, that sheet metal is kind of on the thin side, doesn't quite match up with the factory thickness. The other thing you could do is, and I've got a buddy of mine back happed his TJ to build all cage tube work and everything, more like a buggy. His tub, the back half of his tub is sitting in my backyard right now in case I need to cut out 15 inches. I've got that available in the exact, so that way you know, like up here where it's going to have the kind of like a bend in, it's going to match up perfectly. So it'll be a matter of like bolting the back of the tub, the original back of the tub, to the frame, leaving that 15 inch gap, and then basically taking some cardboard templates to kind of outline exactly the shape that you need to fill, and then transpose that onto, you know, either the, like the tub that's in the back of my backyard, or to that sheet metal from Quadratec, and cut that out and graft it into place, you know.
So we talked a bit about my thoughts on how to cover up all the sins underneath would be like the body armor that you can buy. I think you can buy it from different companies, either aluminum. Yeah. Is that something you're going to do, or is that something like, I don't need to do that?
Yeah, actually, so I got to give a little shout out to JCR Off-Road. I bought all my body armor from them. So I bought my aluminum Highline fenders. I bought aluminum corner guards, aluminum fender flares. All that stuff from them. And I went aluminum to try to keep the weight as low as I possibly can. I mean, I'm already going to be adding probably like 600, 700 pounds of axles under this thing. So I need to try to cut weight where I can. But yeah, so I've got blank aluminum corner armor that I'll cut out my wheel well opening wherever I need it to be. And, but yeah, that's kind of the nice thing about having a Jeep and doing this is that stuff is available. And so you don't have to do perfect body work. There's, you know, it's going to be covered up with rock, you know, some corner armor. So the only thing that's going to be visible is way up at the top by the belt rail. That's the only real paint, or, you know, you don't even have to really paint under here. Just prime it and, you know, deal with the potential rust under there. But, you know, that's not much to really be concerned about.
So now people are looking at your Jeep. It's all tore apart. It's going back together. How many hours do you have into it so far? And how many hours do you think you got left?
I'm not even gonna try to answer that. it's been really slow going. It would be a lot farther along, but you know, hours wise, man, I honestly don't know. I mean, obviously, just at least dozens and dozens into it already. And what I've got coming up, if it was just doing the TJ6 stuff, I'd maybe be able to wrap it up. If it was a full time job, maybe in like 2 weeks, maybe. But because I'm also doing all new suspension front and rear, and I'm putting an Atlas in, and, you know, transfer case and all this other kind of stuff, yeah, that it complicates the whole project, you know. Yeah, so it's kind of hard to separate TJ6 from, you know, all this other stuff that's also going on simultaneously.
So our big debate when we started this whole thing was, what's cheaper, buying an LJ or going through this process? Now, When I talk about this, is like, if you already have a TJ that's built, say you have a TJ that has your lockers, your 33, 35, 37s already on there, you have that all done, and then you'd have to start all over, okay? And I asked you this, you said this was probably definitely cheaper. Would you say that it was definitely cheaper?
Without a doubt, if you just have a TJ and you just want to make it a TJ6, this is undoubtedly cheaper than selling your TJ and buying an LJ.
Yeah.
Without a question.
Especially if
but you better be, you better be pretty confident in your welding skills. And, you know, you don't want your Jeep falling in half, you know, breaking in half when you're wheeling it, you know?
You know, if I do this, I'll come down there and I want mine to be the third one you do. I always say that. Before I talked about how our first lift we did for my buddy Wade's Rubicon, it took us, say it took us 8-10 hours. You know, the second one we did probably took us 6 hours. The third one, I think, they were done before I got over there. That's how quick it got done.
So good timing.
Well, the third one, it was good job. You got that one knocked out quick before I even get over there. They were done. And so they knew what the hangup was going to be. They knew the process. And not that putting a winch in is hard, but I think the third time I put a winch on, it was no problem. Like, yeah, this goes here, this goes here, this goes here. And I still screwed something up, and I had to like, why didn't I just do it this way? I would have been done 10 minutes ago. But it's always a process. It's those aftermarket numbers that I don't like that was slowing me down. But so when do you think you're going to get this done? Is it going to be a 2021 finish line thing, or is it going to be spilling next summer or next week? What do you think?
Oh, I'm planning on this year. If things go really well, I'll still make our Colorado trip in late September.
Oof. All right, that's aggressive, but if you got
it's extremely aggressive, but I've got a reputation for doing moronic things. So hey, you know, if we're gonna set a goal, make it unrealistic, you know.
So do you all on your own, or do you have a couple knuckleheads that come over and help you out? How does it work out? Do you have a few friends?
Yeah. So I've got like I said, my buddies in AJE, a lot of really knowledgeable and talented fabricators, and just really knowledgeable, you know, Jeep folks in general. And, you know, we always kind of bounce around helping one another out as we need to, you know, and whether it's just doing some, you know, a simple install of a lift kit, for example, you know, or, you know, replacing some ball joints or, you know, in the case of my buddy Mark, he's completely building a CJ5. Like, if you think this is taking on a lot, you should see what he's done. Yeah. He's stretching a CJ5 and first, cause he's now got a couple of kids and he, you know, anyway, so needs change and, you know, so does his Jeep. But yeah, so it's that group that, you know, if I'm going to be doing something that I can't do by myself that night, cause maybe something's too heavy to move by myself or whatever, I'll just, you know, hit up my buddies, and usually, you know, one or two people will be free to come help out, and, you know, they'll come lend a hand and we'll get it knocked out.
Yeah, that's the great thing about Jeep guys is they want to jump in and help each other out, because the next time you do something or I do something, I want people to help me out. And that's the problem tonight. I'll tell you, I'm going to apologize to my buddy Wade. He helped me out 2 summers ago. We did the whole front end, ball joints, U-joints, brakes, steering on my Jeep. 103 degrees in my garage. And this is the one I recorded about this, where we spent an extra 3 hours because we forgot to take the C-clip out of the U-joint. Okay. We were like, why can't we go his house twice back? And he's yelling at me about not having tools, kind of driving me back and forth. He goes, oh, Mitch, you know, I forgot to take the C-clip out. And it all fell apart after you did that. I'm like, oh, God. Now he's doing all that again on the second time on his Rubicon tonight. Now, it's my 21st wedding anniversary was yesterday. We're celebrating tonight. So
congrats.
I don't get to help my buddy Wade out. I'm really bummed out because he helped me out. And I'm like, dang it, I want to be over there to drink his beer and to help him out.
but you know, it kind of brings up something, though. Like, just because, like, say if you don't know, you're not very mechanically inclined, you don't really know what you're doing around a Jeep, but you know you got your buddy doing this crazy thing that's way beyond your fabrication skills or knowledge level or whatever, still don't think you shouldn't offer help. Because honestly, I've had so many friends who really are not mechanically inclined. They don't know how to work on a car. But if they're around here simply to hand a wrench over or to do this, so I don't have to crawl off, it's amazing how helpful that is. So just because you may not be crazy knowledgeable, you know, don't sweat it.
With my buddy Wade, what are you doing? I'm holding the flashlight like this, handing him a tool. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
It looks like he's gonna need a 10 millimeter here in about 5 minutes. I'll go find a 10 come back is, oh, I need a 10. Oh, you're there. You got it. Because it's no fun being like, way into the Jeep. Here's the other thing. Here's what I'm always good on. Is he's under the Jeep, all stuff's falling. I'm like, here's your safety glasses. He's, oh, God, puts them on and gets going again because you're under there and you get troll hogging dirt. That's another place you go. Troll hogging dirt, yeah. Dirt coming off, and you just put the safety glasses on. They can fall all at once then because being the guy to hand the seat, you know, it's great having people help you out.
Or
if you need ball joints and you need some muscle, I'm over there helping doing that because hardest I think I've ever worked in my life. And I can squat, or used to be able to squat over 600 pounds. But doing the ball joint thing, he goes, you got to keep pushing. I'm like, oh my God, I don't got it in me. Finally it pops, you fall on the ground. And like, oh my God, why do they do that? But I learned recently, actually, I go to the chiropractor. Chiropractor said to me, I told the story, I think, on the podcast. I said, my neck's out. He goes, oh, what are you doing? He goes, I don't know if you know anything about cars or about changing ball joints and new joints in my Jeep. He goes, I've done ball joints tons of times. I'm like, looking at this dude. He drives a pretty sweet Mercedes. He goes, I have 40 cars. He tells me the story how he has 40 cars. He's never gotten rid of a car. He builds classic Ford sedans from the 40s, late 40s.
He goes, nice.
I never got rid of a car. I have 40 cars. I'm like blown away. This guy just, he's a chiropractor, so you never know. The office is a small office in Richfield. But he starts telling me this story about his cars. I'm like, 40, huh? So someday I got to see my chiropractor's car collection because it's 40. But he goes, I love my Mercedes and all, but where I really get my kicks out of is my 40s Ford sedans. I love my sedans. I got tons of those and I changed plenty of ball joints. And I'm worth that ball joint. It ripped my neck out. So I go in and get adjusted. And long story about my neck problems, but it has the stems from football. Football's not good for your neck. So put it that way. The other day, though, it's great having a couple friends that kind of work with in the garage and this podcast. One reason I want to do the podcast is promote off-roading and wheeling. Like you said before, there's not much public land. And I told you before we started recording, we lost a little bit of land in Minnesota, actually Wisconsin, that we all been going on for the last 35 years. Chuck's winter runs, fall run. I'm not sure if it's going to happen anymore, but we're kind of bummed about that. But we don't have that land to go on, but we're opening other lands. So we're trying to find more land to go on. And Gilbert's our big place. Trollhoggin's another place we go here in Minnesota. Because he asked me, what kind of wheeling y'all do up there in Minnesota? A little bit of everything. Now we have the border-to-border trails going in. And our friend Leslie, who's been on the podcast, he has an off-roading, overlanding kind of tour guide. That's his full-time job now, is an overlanding tour guide. So it's a kind of cool. Overlanding or car camping is kind of all the rage. I mean, I hate mud, and so I didn't get to that part. I despise going mudding. It's not my thing. It's for other
people. I hate mud.
Mud. It will be there forever. It gets in everything, and just not a fan. But a little rock, little hill climb, little sand. I'm into all that. Long as I can drive my Jeep home. I'm pretty excited about that. You know, if I have to change a tire or tire plugs, I don't know if you got to that episode yet, but that was a fun episode.
Yeah.
tire plugs. We get to the point now, we have onboard air and tire plugs and the spare doesn't even fit. It's, you know, two of the guys we wheel with, they have like a 30-inch spare and they have 33s on their Jeep. I'm like, it's not going to work. I'm like, it's just for show. We're just going to plug them anyhow. So it's kind of the feeling we get nowadays with our spare tires even. But I have a full-size spare, brand new, on the Jeep. Because I like having a real spare, but that's just me.
I used to, and now once I went up to 37s, I'd only put a 30 a spare in there when I was going on a long trip or something. But stepping up to 40s, not gonna happen.
Yeah. So in the end, though, I'm excited to hear about this. I'm gonna recap this with you in late August before you have your big September trip. I'm gonna get you back on. And we're going to do a there it is. There's some motivation.
Now I'm obligated to work on it more. Oh.
I did this to Chad, too. We were talking to Chad from Zeus Off Road. I was talking about his LJA that he had. And he goes, he motivated me to get on it again. So I'm back working on his – he has a whole shop And so the last thing he wants to do is work on his own stuff, but he got motivated, worked on his own stuff. And now he actually got rid of the LJ and he's onto a different project. So I got to catch up with him and see what the new project is. I think I have an idea, but,
I got to tell you that real quick. One of the main reasons I started a YouTube channel was so that I would feel motivated to continue work on the Jeep, because I'm like, I can't just create one video and never follow up on it. I'm going to have to do something. And so it was actually kind of one of my, motivating factors is the reason why I kind of created the YouTube channel.
So yeah, the YouTube channel's name is Wheel Addiction. And it's a yellow TJ that's in pieces, and I have it on. Oh, there's your safety glasses are on right there. So it's on my TV right now. There, he's going, he's tearing into something now. But I want you guys to go on here, follow it, and give him crap about not finishing the project yet, because I want to see this completed. Bring it on, he says. I want to see it because I like seeing some Frankenstein stuff. I do like it. Especially when it starts to look stock at the end. The first JL that came out, the four-door JL, Fred from Dirt Every Day got it and made it into a two-door. So
I saw that.
It's called Code One. He couldn't wait to make it back into a two-door. This is before the two-doors even came out. So he took that. Then Light Bright, they were on recently. They were on Jeep Week or Jeep Beach Week, whatever it was called, down in Daytona. And they ran into a guy that had a stretch two-door JL. So the LJ love isn't going away. So that's two examples of people who just couldn't leave well enough alone on a brand new.
Yep.
They had to make them look back like a JL again. So I invite you to find those. I couldn't tell you how far it is. If you don't want to watch all the other stuff on Light Bright stuff, which it's a great channel, but some fluff in there. But I like it. They just bought a house. Did you see that? I don't know if you guys watch it, but if you're listening to this, they just bought a house with a massive shop. So they're going to do some crazy stuff again.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that. And they have their own builder living with them. They have a builder who moved in with them too to build stuff for them. So it's going to be cool. I can't wait.
you touched on one thing is like, I feel very much the same way. Like when I stretched my Jeep, I wanted it to look like it was a factory offering. I didn't want it to look like some monstrosity. Yeah, it's Frankenstein underneath, but it doesn't look like one. You know what I mean? And one of the biggest compliments that I ever got was one day I came out of work and there was some guy looking at my Jeep, like eyeing it all up and everything. And as I came walking up, I'm like, can I help you? And he goes, did you stretch this or what? And I said, yeah, it's stretched about 6 inches in the rear. And he goes, that's it. He's like, I was talking with my buddy who's also got a Jeep and we were trying to figure out what is it that's different about this thing? And I was like, that may be the best compliment I've ever gotten about my Jeep, because it meant that from the outside, it was cleanly done. It was done cleanly enough that it could pass for factory.
Yeah.
And that meant a lot to me.
Yeah, that's cool. I think that having the look, or having people come and look at your Jeep and just say, hey, that's pretty cool. Or to stoplights. One of the next episodes, I'm going to have stoplight conversations that I have with people.
Yeah.
So wait for that, because I had one here recently, and I'm gonna bring it up later on, but in the next episode with somebody else, because I was like, that's a whole podcast right there, the conversations I have with people at stoplights, because the top-down doors off, people are going to ask you a question or give you a compliment.
Yep. You're accessible.
Got a lot of compliments, got a lot of like offers for my Jeep. I said, no, it's not for sale. So, I'm going to talk about that in the next episode, because I got a whole theory on not theory, but a whole vein I want to get into on that and stuff. But first off, I'm going to have to let you go here, because I have things to do today and we've been talking. You're easy to talk to. So I don't know if your friends tell you that, but you kind of help the conversation along, which is great.
I appreciate it.
Name of the YouTube channel is Wheel Addiction. I'm going to put this video on my YouTube channel, my CrossFit Off-Road, which I barely have anything on, to be honest with you. I'm going to put this on there so you can see kind of it in pieces, and it's going to be on, obviously, the podcast itself. But Wheel Addiction, the yellow TJ stretching out to a TJ6. Right now, it's going back together, so I'm excited to see it all happen. So thanks again, Tommy, for being on and share this with your friends. And I hope you're at, well, you're at 500 and how many followers you have right now on YouTube?
Yeah, it's approaching like 540 something, maybe.
541, I think it was when I looked at it. So hopefully you get over 600 here just with this and maybe even more. So during this whole crazy year we've had, podcasting actually went down, but YouTubing went way up.
Yeah.
YouTube went way up during this crazy time, which was really weird. But hopefully when we get back to normal here in the next couple months, that podcasting shoots up, because that'd be fun for everybody, I think. I think YouTube.
Yeah, man.
YouTube's here to stay. We all know that. thanks again, Tommy. We'll touch base soon. I want to see how things kind of pan out for you, okay?
Yeah, man. Appreciate it, Mitch. Thanks a bunch.
Good luck.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Crossroad Off-Road Podcast, brought to you by Prime Shape Fitness, your one-stop shop for your fitness needs.